Choose your next words carefully, Leonidas. They may be your last.
Madman. You're a madman. Blasphemy. This is madness.
This is Sparta!
Who do we have left? Britney Spears. Cam Kardashian. Paris Hilton. Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global.
I mean, the lines are blowing up.
Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E.
Oh, look at you!
All right, everybody, I'll be right with you. I'm a good guy. If you attack us, I attack you. Here I am. Hello, my name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and you're with the Brian Hammer Jackson Show. Boy, he was powerful. This is a no-win situation.
Thank you.
welcome to the show. My name is Brian Hammer Jackson. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. We are global. We're worldwide. We're on at a different time right now because of things I had to do. That's it. So hopefully I'll reach out to a different audience and some of my friends will come in. I know I want to give a shout out to a beautiful young lady named Laverne. She's listening. Another beautiful lady named Melissa. She's listening. I want to give a shout out to the psychotic ward in Philadelphia. They're listening. And to the prisoners in San Quentin. Great audience. Thank you, fellas, for tuning in. What an audience I have. But if you like to come in, the number is 319-527-6099. 319-527-6099. That's the number to get you in. That's the number. Your voice will be heard worldwide. Top story. Normally we have good stories. Our top story is about Matthew Perry. I can't get him out of my head. You know, it seems in our personality we want people who are successful to fall. You don't want to admit it, but we do. That's what sells papers. It was a happy story about Matthew Perry. We wouldn't even be talking about him. But this is a true horror story, life and death. He hit rock bottom, and that's what makes him interesting. If you really want to be honest, that's what makes him interesting. We build up our heroes. I mean, this is how we are as society, right? We want the challenged people to succeed. You know, we root for them, the underdog. But once they get up there, we want them to fall. There's no net. And we're the first one to make a comment. Sure, you're going to give us that poor guy or oh, that poor woman. No, you're not. You don't want people to be that successful and be above you. This is just human nature. It's human nature. The reason we're going to talk about Matthew Perry is we're going a little further, too, because here's the copy I put in. Matthew Perry reveals his heart stopped beating for 5 minutes. The doctor broke 8 of my ribs during CPR. 8 of his ribs. A doctor did this. It's not just some stranger, but a doctor had to break 8 of his ribs to do CPR. That got me thinking. We all go to the doctor. We all take some form of medication. And if you haven't, you will. Whether it's medication like weed or whatever, you want to trip on gummies, whatever. But the question is, do everybody who take medication or you go to the doctor, can you subject yourself to addiction? And who are these people who get addicted to take it that far? Because we all have taken Tylenol, we all taken this. But what about that percentage of people who get a little bit of Oxycontin, fentanyl? Now, hear me out before, you know, you heard the word, the F word, right? The F word is fentanyl, not fuck. What is more offensive, fentanyl or fuck? Let me think. Fentanyl. I should do a poll on my social media to see what's more offensive. But while I'm still at fentanyl here, I'm sure you guys all know this. Halloween is coming. And if you haven't been listening, if you're the type of person that I don't want to hear the news, I went out with a girl once that never listen to the news. And I said, why don't you listen to the news? She goes, because I don't want to hear the bad things. I want to think life is full of beautiful and glory and happiness. I don't want to hear the bad things. So if you're one of those people who don't want to hear the news, or you maybe get your highlight from the weekly news, well, what's happening now is that these drug dealers got smart. They're going to hook their customers. What they're doing now is that they came out with these fentanyl tablets that look like Skittles, different colors of the rainbow. Not only did they do that, what they're doing is they're putting them inside the candies. They're putting them inside the M&Ms, and they're putting the tablets inside regular Skittles and everything. So on Halloween, you got to be careful. You got to cut that shit open because that's what they're doing. They're putting fentanyl tablets inside the candy. And it looks just, the package looks normal. And even if they duplicate the package, you can't really tell the difference between what is the fake M&Ms and what is the fentanyl, or what is the real M&Ms. It's true. If you don't believe me, you got to Google this shit. This is what's happening. So I want you to remember that if you're a parent and you have a grandkid who's going for trick-or-treating. You got to look at this shit. This is what's happening in this cruel, cruel, cruel world. You got to cut that shit open. But then I went a little further. I wanted to know what kind of personalities get hooked on it. I mean, recently my brother had surgery, and then he was talking about how great fentanyl was. And Michael Jackson loved fentanyl. He loved it to death. It made him have a great sleep. That's how he slept. And so when you do go to the hospital, and they do give you Oxycontin, and they will. See, here's the trick now. They may give you Oxycontin or painkillers, but they'll give you 5 tablets, like for 5 days. But is that enough to get you addicted, for addicted personality? I mean, when you have back pain, you have other pain and everything, you know, 5 days is not enough. If you got constant pain throughout your life, and, you know, that makes you feel a little better. I mean, what kind of personality? So we're going to take a deep dive. Do you have an addiction personality? After I do the story, do you take the test? Do you have the addiction personality to get hooked? Do you come out of surgery and go, what was that? Oh, it was the best sleep, like my brother did. I want that. You got a pain in your leg, a pain in your back, a pain in your neck. These are things you can't fix. You go to the chiropractor, bullshit. You do anything to get you out of that pain, and all of a sudden you take a little bit of this. I got painkillers right now that I haven't even taken, but they're there. So we're going to look. What's the difference between me and you? Why I don't have an addictive personality, but if I'm in pain, guess what? I go through the pain. I may take a couple of Tylenol, but I'm staying away. I am scared to death to take those pain pills or Oxycontin or even fentanyl. But we're going to see what kind of personalities do get hooked really quickly. And we're going to do that. And I have one of, hello, Mr. David King.
What's going on, Brian? And
good to hear your voice. King, what's been going on? We're going to talk about addiction and shit like that. I know you're a musician. Yeah. Well, you're a rapper, you're a song, you're an entertainer.
Yeah.
You're still a musician. It's all around you, man. Come on, man. It's around you. What makes you not do it? What makes you not take it?
Take what?
Take, you know, you hang around musicians and rappers and everything. You're talking to them and everything. We both have a person in common that used to come on a show that, you know, he's drunk off his ass every day. So what makes you not get drunk every day? What makes you not say, you know what, maybe I need a little Coke. I'm working on a song. I need some inspiration. Why don't I just take some mushrooms, man? I need to really get this going. What makes you not take drugs?
I mean, I don't really have no reason to, you know. I don't have no reason to. But I do drink on an occasion, you know what I mean? Like, of course, on Fridays, when I get off to work, you know, I give me a cold one. I sit outside and smoke me a cigar and about it, you know what I mean? But all I know is some people may not know, but, you know, when you do drugs, all they do is, it just messes up your body, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For an example, your heart is one of your main body parts, just as well as your brain. And so if you're doing hard drugs, you're going to either get an enlarged heart or you're going to get some other little small issue that could really rupture the heart and boom, you know? So it's just, I don't know. Some people do it because they need the energy. I mean, you got some people, man, they work about 12-hour shifts, and or some of them, they go to school, and some of them, they just need it to stay awake, give them a boost, you know. But that's, you know what I mean? But for myself, you know, I don't need none of that, you know what I mean? I work and go to school every day, so on Fridays when I get off of work, then sometimes I give me something to drink, and that's about it. So, so yeah,
well,
about it.
I mean, I did it. I was one of these people. I didn't smoking, for instance. I used to go to the clubs, and here's how I started smoking. As I went to a club, I would never smoke. If I went to a club, I would have a drink. And I noticed that and I made the stupid mistake, drank it really quickly, and I put the empty glass right on the table. Sure enough, here comes the waitress. Would you like another drink? I go, okay. You know what I mean? And I found out that mentally I had a drink to hold the table. Everybody else was standing up. It was one of these tables. Okay, you leave. I'm gonna get your table. So it was almost like I had to do something to hold that table. So I got smart. I wasn't smart. This is my addiction to cigarettes, how I got addicted to cigarettes. So I said, okay, I can't keep affording sitting there and I'm buying drink after drink after drink, right? And plus I'm getting drunk and it's not good. I had to come up with a new plan. So what I did was I went to the club, and back then you could smoke in the club. And I get an ashtray, and what I did was bought a pack of cigarettes, right? And so I was not a smoker. I would just leave the cigarette lit on the ashtray, and it kept them away. It kept them away. I'm kicking back. I had a drink. I'm smoking a cigarette. Leave me alone, you know? So the waitress will stay away from me. But I had to keep puffing that cigarette to keep it lit. As much as it made me sick and I'm coughing, but at least I had my table. Well, eventually doing that, all of a sudden it started tasting good to me. Like, you know, the coughing stopped. Next thing you know, hey, I got that pack here that normally I put, you know, when I take out, I'll bring out the pack in my glove compartment, you know, it's for to keep the waitress away. And all of a sudden I'm driving home and I go, it looks kind of good to me. Next thing you know, I'm smoking. Next thing you know, I'm smoking. King, I'm smoking. I'm smoking in my car and everything, right? This went on for 30, 35 years. We're talking, I mean, that's how I started. And then I'll talk about my past. I'll talk about the cocaine and how I got cocaine. I was never, King, I had, believe it or not, I had a $500 a week habit of coke. Of coke. A week. Now,
damn.
I'm not a cocaine guy. King, I'm not a cocaine guy. Now, how did this happen? I'll tell you. I was dating this model, right? And a friend of mine says she gets really freaky when she's high on coke. I go, really? How freaky? And he started telling me shit. He said that. I go, she does what? Oh, yeah. Seriously? I've been going out with this bitch for 2 weeks, and she hasn't, you know, I had to pay her just to go give me a blowjob. Then the guy goes, no, you give her some coke, right? And she'll do that shit, and she'll do this shit. And I go, this shit, really? Damn, is that legal? Damn. And she'll bring her girlfriend? What? Her girlfriend comes over, too? So you're hearing this, right? I mean, she's fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's gonna bring over her girlfriend. I mean, hell, I would have taped up my arm and shot myself with heroin. You should have seen her girlfriend. So I said, really? He goes, yeah. And so I'm just trying to tell you my. I go, well, how do I get this? He goes, how do you get what? This coke. He goes, you don't even know how to. I go, no. What do you do with it? And he goes, I can get it for you. I go, what do I do? I mean, do I chop it up? I mean, he had this stir, and he had all these stuff, you know? He goes, I got you. I go, you got me? I go, I got you. Okay. So he brings it over, right? And I go, and it's this stuff. And I go, what the hell is this? It's like in a bag. He goes, that's coke. I go, really? It looked like sugar. He goes, don't act like an asshole. Be cool. Okay, fine. He goes, now you wave this in front of him. Okay, fine. So the date was, I go to her, I got a surprise for you. And, you know, she's acting all uppity and everything. So I go, oh, God, I don't want to deal with this. And then I said, okay, I got a surprise for you. She goes, what? And I showed her face lit up like a pumpkin, you know, like little pumpkins with a candle in it and then big eyes, you know what I mean? And pretty soon her teeth would be like a pumpkin later on. Who knew? They don't tell you about that. Mm-hmm. They don't tell you about that. So she lit up, man. She was happy. She did a happy dance. She even played my music. And all of a sudden she goes, I'll be right back. I'm going to change. She changed into something. I go, damn. Did you see one of those lingerie magazines? I go, damn, this is like happy stuff. you know, Michael Jackson had his Jesus juice. I got my, you know, I don't know, maybe I have my prophet powder. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? So she goes, yeah. And she started doing it and the sniffing and the fingernail thing. And I go, and it's like, and then she does it. She goes, oh. And I go, oh. She goes, well, you try. I go, no, 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 this is all for you. And she started doing things, you know, that you see in Pornhub. You know? I go, wow, look at this. And then she goes, I don't want to do this alone. And I go, well, okay, maybe just one, right, King? Maybe just one. And then I did it, and it burned my nose, and it's like my, I started sweating like, you know, I started sweating like I was a Baptist in some kind of Christian school that I shouldn't be there, that they're going to expose me. You know, I go, what the hell is this? And boom. Every day that I dated her, she goes, do you have it? I go, have what? It was a continuous thing. I opened up the door. And then it's just like the cigarette thing, I found myself doing it. It wasn't so much doing it for the drug itself, is that what she was going to do. And King, and it's sure enough, you want to meet my girlfriend, Beverly? I go, yeah. She go, ah, cool, fool. Yeah, I'll bring the bitch over. He turned into Superfly, Curtis Mayfield. Where's my hat? Mm. So she did. Next thing you know, I'm in the middle of a sandwich. And it's like, and I see this passing it, and I go, ooh. Then I'm surrounded by boobs. Oh, Brian, you're the best. Let's have some more drinks. I'm so good. Then the worst thing happened, King. I swear to God, don't ever let this happen to you. So one of the girls thought, you know, there's two of us and only one of him. I can handle, you know, this time I'm wasted. I can handle him. Well, let's do something to him. I go, oh, good, good. They're going to do good stuff to me. And then they put the cocaine on the tip of my dick. King, I stayed hard for 10 hours. They left and I still had it wouldn't go down. It wouldn't. I'm going, what the hell is this? I'm calling my friends, and they're laughing at me. I go, you're no help. I mean, I'm serious. And so you know me. I'm a mama's boy. When I get in trouble, mama, I made the call. Hi, baby. Hey, mama. I'm like 23 years old, man. You know what I mean? What am I going to tell my mom that I got coke on my dick? But I did. Mama, explain it to your mother. That what's wrong, baby? Well, mom, I got cocaine on my dick. She goes, what? Boy?
Well, at least you didn't try to. At least you didn't try to batter the chick.
I know. It finally went down. I went shopping with the motherfucker. I drove with the motherfucker. Then I couldn't leave the house. And then here's the bad part of it. It got to be, again, I was caught up in what it did for other people, and I benefit from it. I'm talking girls, right? Because that girl had a girlfriend. And then, of course, they got noses. So when you bring over the girlfriend, you got noses, and you had to feed the noses. Right? Do you have any more? And money. And then you're going to the CD guys. I don't have anything, but I have a friend and friend. I know a friend who has a friend who knows a friend. And that dude can help you out. And you don't know the fuck who this guy is. And next thing you know, you're meeting them by the dumpster in a Chinese restaurant in the alley. And you don't know what you're getting, you know? It got to be, and how it stopped, I didn't bathe for about a month. Nothing. I was stinky as fuck. I didn't bathe. My hair just looked like I just busted out of an insane asylum. Buckwheat would look at me and say, "Man, you need to comb your hair. You know, is that bad?" And so one day I woke up from a pile of women and was like four. I'm not kidding you. Booze everywhere. I didn't even know the other three people's names. I woke up and I looked and I go, I don't even know who the fuck they are. I was one of these guys that I don't want to catch no diseases because at that time AIDS just came out and all this shit. And I go, what did I do? And I haven't even looked at myself for a month. I didn't even see myself in a mirror for a month. I looked at myself in a mirror, King. And my cheeks were so sunken, they were just sunken in. I was like a skeleton. My eyes were popping out like you would think, like these little dogs, these dogs with the big eyes. It was like, yeah. That's who it was. That's who it was. I looked in the mirror and I screamed. I go, who the hell are you? And it said the same thing. Why are you mocking me? I go, oh, my God, that's me. I didn't recognize myself. I did not recognize myself.
I can get ready to clock in, man.
Okay, man. It's good to hear you.
Yep.
I'm glad you came by. Thank you, man.
You know, God, all right. Good because now you don't do that stuff anymore, so I just want to congratulate you on that.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you very
all right,
much.
I'll talk to you later.
All right, you be good. Bye. Thank you, King. But finishing the story is that when I looked in the mirror and I said, that's not me. Quit, told the girls to get out, took a shower, got back to myself within a month, stopped the stuff, everything. So you just don't know what you're getting into. You just don't know how you're feeling. The reason I did it, the reason I started smoking was a stupid reason, just to hold a table. The reason I did the cocaine was a stupid reason, just because I was indulging into sex. But what I did to myself was unbelievable, and I didn't realize what I did. So we're going to go with Matthew Perry. This guy, I think, was making $1 million a week at 24. I do not have him on Facebook. I may have him on Facebook because I would like to hear, because he wants to tell his story. In fact, he has a new book out. It's on Amazon. And, now I have to do this stuff. And I think by now it should have it in his own words, what he went through on Friends. And we all knew, if you watch Friends towards the end, you saw how fat the dude was. And if you were watching Friends when they had that reunion and you heard the dude talk, the dude was slurring, he couldn't talk, he seemed like he was out of it. And he blamed it on a dental thing. You know, okay, here we go, Matthew Perry book. And he blamed it that he was on painkillers it's already a bestseller, by the way. I don't know if I can listen to it. Hold on.
Unfortunately, we are unable to release a sample prior to the publication release of this book.
It's coming out November 1st. It says here, the beloved star of Friends takes us behind the scenes of his hit sitcom and his struggles with addiction and his candid, funny, and revelatory memoir that delivers a powerful message of hope and persistence. Hi, my name is Matthew. Although you may know me by another name, my friends call me Maddie. And I should be dead. That's how he opens it up. So begin the riveting story of acclaimed actor Matthew Perry, taking us along on his journey from childhood ambition to fame to addiction and recovery in the aftermath of life-threatening health scare. His ass exploded. I guess I ruined the whole thing. Before the frequent hospital visits and stints in rehab, there was a 5-year-old Matthew who traveled from Montreal to Los Angeles. Shuffling between his separated parents, 14-year-old Matthew, who was nationally ranked tennis star, he played tennis in Canada. 24-year-old Matthew, who nabbed a coveted role as a lead cast member on a talked-about pilot, then called Friends Like Us, and so much more. In an extraordinary story that only he could tell, in a heartfelt, hilarious, and warmly familiar way only he could tell it. So he's going into this stuff. Where I'm from, a junkie is a junkie. A druggie is a druggie. I don't care from the little old lady who got addicted to Percocet or addicted from Oxycontin to the junkie on the street. They're the same one. So when I look at Matthew Parody and he's telling the story, a junkie is a junkie. Matthew Perry lays bare the fractured family that raised him and also left him to his own devices, the desire for recognition that drove him to fame, and the void inside him that could not be filled even by his greatest dreams coming true. Can you imagine? A lot of us will never see $1 million in our life. This motherfucker has $1 million a week. A week. I don't know. I'm going to feel sorry for him. I can't feel sorry for him. Hello, lovely lady Laverne. Good morning. Oh, good afternoon.
Hello, hello.
Hello. You know, Laverne, I can't feel sorry for him. I can't.
Okay, but look, I thought his surgery of the experience of exploding, I thought that was recently.
It is. He wrote it. He has it. This is his book that's coming out in November 1st, and he's telling all about it. So I'm reading a little thing about his. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, if that happened recently, how can he have already put it in a book?
Well, I don't know when he's okay now. So I don't know. How long did it take for him to, you know, that he was done with this? Because I know he's not wearing the bag anymore. So it might have took 2 or 3 years after that, and he's getting well, that he can write a book, you know. But he's just telling you the story that he went through. I hear what you're saying. I don't know when his ass exploded. His ass could have exploded 3 years ago, and he's just telling the story now. I know I'm saying it like, you know, it's asking. I know it's weird to say that, but can you imagine that? I mean, wow, what a mess. But it just
sounds science fiction.
But you know, when you hear people who are gluttony, you know, even in the Bible it says gluttony and greed and wealth, and you just don't know what to do with it, man. I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand how people could throw their lives away when they finally get it. Or with, you hear it all the time with people with lottery tickets, and they go broke and they do stupid stuff because they're not used to having money. So they just go nuts.
Now, I know I used to just – I had only seen him in Friends. I didn't follow him in other shows. So did he stay in films after – after Friends?
Well, he had another series after Friends. It was a takeoff on Jack Klugman's show, Tony Randall. What was that TV show that they had? Odd Couple. He tried to do an Odd Couple series. It didn't go well. He did a couple of movies that no big deal. But he tried to do that series called Odd Couple. And I think it ran for one season and they canceled it, but I think he was still addicted at that time. And I think people are watching Friends now so they can see when he was addicted, look at this guy, you know, look at this train wreck. Mm-hmm. When did he become addicted? I could tell. So that's what it is. So now he wants to tell a story. He wants to make a book. It says here, in an extraordinary story, that only he could tell. It says here, he bears it all. The desire for recognition that drove him to fame. He also details the peace, P-E-A-C-E, he found in sobriety and how he feels about the about friends and sharing stories about his castmates and other stars he met along the way. I don't know. I'm thinking... Does he need? He doesn't need the money. I mean, he's still getting residuals from friends. He doesn't need the money. So this is not like I'm broke and I'm going to sell a book so I can get it. He doesn't need it.
Okay.
Because he's still getting residuals from friends, and I'm sure he gets a lot of money each time that TV show is played or every year. I think I don't know why he's telling this story. I don't know why people feel that they have to tell this. I know that bullshit like, well, if I tell my story, I'm going to help somebody. I don't think that's it. I think I don't know if this is a confession. I don't know if this is, I'm sorry, this is how I really acted. I apologize to my audience, but this is what I was going through. I think it's more or less that than I, it is a bestseller, by the way, and it hasn't even came out yet. It's coming out in November. So I don't know why they need, I tell stories because if you're listening to me, I just want you to know, I understand. You know, I've been in that world, you know, maybe not as deep as these people, but I can understand how someone could feel, you know. And then I hear some people, oh, Brian is on cocaine. We have one person who comes in the studio always says, oh, you're a druggie, you're this and you're this, and how do you know? You wasted your life away. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. You know, the reasons of what I did was stupid, but I could do it. And that I actually looked at myself and say, I love myself more than a drug. Oh, that could be a good title of a book. Because I saw what it did to me, what it did to me, and I would not have that. I saw that I'm in bed with strange women that I didn't know who they are. I mean, I was susceptible to getting AIDS or HIV because of that behavior. And I decided that I loved myself more than I loved the drug itself, and it was sending me downward. That's how I got out of it. But again, Laverne, if I had a backache that was killing me, that I can't move, or I had a knee problem, or I had migraines, and the only thing that that make it go away are these strong-ass drugs and these strong-ass medications, I don't know. I mean, Tylenol just doesn't do it all the time, you know? Would I do it to stop the pain?
See, that's the thing. You 9 times out of 10, you will take it. And then I'm going to speak for myself. If I'm in pain, and all I have is the medication that was given to me, and like you said, it might not even be was given to me directly. But if I knew that it would stop the pain, yes, 9 times out of 10, I would take it. Nine times out of 10.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking, you know, back in the day, you know, we got on these people, Oxycontin. We broke open what happened. You know, we let the genie out of the thing that these doctors are getting people hooked on Oxycontin and whatever. We broke the story. Okay, so I don't know if it was a good thing. So now the doctors are saying, all right, well, now when we give you these Oxycontins or we give you this pain medication, to this day, we're only going to give you 5 tablets. We're only going to give you 6 because we cannot be held accountable if you get an addiction. And if you want more, we're going to blow the whistle on you, but you're the motherfucker who gave it to me. But it's okay. Forget that. So I don't know if it's a good thing. So now I'm saying to Dr. Feelgood, Doc, he goes, yeah, I need a little something. Well, I gave you 5 tablets. Yeah, but I took them all yesterday. I need a little something. Well, I can't give them to you anymore. I go, are you serious? So you know what I'm going to do, Laverne? I'm going to the street. At least in the old days, see, this is going to sound stupid, and I know it's going to, as soon as I say it out of my mouth, it's going to sound stupid. I'm saying, I wish for the old days, at least the doctor can keep prescribing me the pills. And he's like, well, you've been addicted, Mr. Jackson. Well, fuck you, it's none of your business. Keep giving them to me, right? Because I'm in pain. Well, okay, so you're not going to give them to me. Now you're forcing me to go to the streets. You're forcing me to buy Vicodin tablets to get rid of this pain because this pain is not going away. You're forcing me to get into heroin. You're forcing me to seek out fentanyl so I can sleep because now, since you guys got busted, you're only giving me a limited amount of painkillers versus how it was in the old days when I had a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds stupid, right? So you're forcing me to go in the street. And the street shit is not pure. They're mixing it with bullshit and all this shit. I'm going to overdose. So what is the answer? What is the freaking answer?
I don't know. There may not be no answer because, see, they should have known that even before they start giving it to people that it could be addictive. And I believe they knew this. But then,
right,
like you said, people start abusing it. So they had to cut down on how much they gave you, but they still let them in fault because they were giving it to people that had abused it.
Right.
I think it was still pre-calculated as far as, okay, if this was ever to be limited, then the people would go out on the streets and get it. I still think that wasn't a concern of them. Of theirs, of people going on the street to get it and could possibly get a killer, something that's in it that kills you. I don't think they care about that for real, for real. They've just got to, like you said, look out for their practice and what they're doing. But they did start it. As far as giving you as many as they wanted to give you or how many you asked for at first.
Right. And it's like, so it's like I can't get mad at you. I can't get mad at the junkie in the street looking for something to ease their pain.
Mm-mm.
And
mm-mm.
Now I'm a regular person, regular job. Now you lose your job, you lose everything. So now what? You know, you're busy scoring shit in the street. You want to just stay home and you're a mother and your kids are right. I mean, my God, I don't know how many people are going through this.
Yeah,
but
no, it's a lot, but for them, it's your problem now.
Right. Now, I had a couple of surgeries. I'm sure they gave me some fentanyl. They call it Jesus juice. I told you the story that my last procedure that I was a little nervous and my anesthesiologist was next to me. I go, and it was a dude. See, the dude, you know what? It was funny. I had one anesthesiologist who was a female. I really did. She was from another country. I think she was from South Africa. She had a voice of a saint, of an angel. No matter how nervous I was, you hear, hi. Yeah, 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 yeah. You seemed a little anxious. Anxious my ass. I'm about to lose my shit. You know what I mean? I'm going to my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, look, I normally don't ask this. I said, you're my anesthesia. She goes, yes, I need something. She goes, excuse me? I said, I need something. I mean, I need something to calm me down. I mean, you know, it didn't come from me. It came from people I was talking to. I didn't think they'd do this. I didn't think they would give you shit. It didn't even come in my head to ask my anesthesiologist, do I have a little something? People were telling me, you know, Brian, they always talk like this, you know, Brian, yeah, you know, you can ask your doctor and your anesthesiologist to give you something. Like what? I don't know. Maybe they'll give you something. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're not saying it. I'm not going to say it, but I think you know what I'm saying. I go, okay, they'll give you something to calm your nerves. They'll give you a little something, something. That got in my head, right? So I'm nervous. And it was a nice Indian woman there. She could be Gandhi's mother. You know, I mean, it's just so quiet. And I'm kind of tugging her thing like a child, you know, before she leaves. Hello. She goes, sir, you got to let go of my coat. Nope. Come here. Can you give me a little something? And she said, I'll tell you what. I go, yeah. I'll tell you what. You'll be okay. You'll be sedated when we take you in and everything. You'll have some. I wanted her to say, yes, I want to give you something, but she couldn't say it. She couldn't say it, right? Doctor's there, nurse is there. She just said, you'll be asleep, and we'll give you something in surgery. Yeah, that's all I needed to hear. Oh, you're going to give me, That was her. The dude, the second surgery. So the dude was my person. And I said, Doc. He goes, yes. I'm a little nervous and everything. I guess it worked the first time. I could do the second time, right? Can you give me a little something? He looked at me. He goes, "I think we could do it." I go, "Can you?" And then he kind of did that whisper, creepy whisper. "Yeah, I think we can."
Mm-hmm.
"Can we?" And then I started doing the creepy whisper. "Really? Can we?" He goes, "Yeah, I think we can fix you up." And I'm thinking it's going to be like my other enthusiasts. Sure, you will. You're going to wait till I go into surgery. I know the deal. Okay, you're saying this to calm me down. But then 10 minutes, he comes back to me. And he goes, "How you doing?" I go, "I'm still anxious, Doc." I told you the story, so it's no big deal, but I haven't told it on the air. And he had a fistful of, starts with an A, help me out, not Ambien, Xanax. Oh, I'm sorry, Xanax. And I counted them. They were nine. nine tablets of Xanax. And he goes, "Look." And look, I reached for them and I just swallowed all of them. And he just looked at me going, "Oh, my God." Was I supposed to take one? Did I do that? "You're going to be fine." I go, "Yeah, you're going to be really fine." "Was I supposed to take all of them?" "Well, no, sir. You're not supposed to." "Oh, my bad." "You shouldn't have showed me them." But I can understand people getting hooked. The anxiety was real. The pain is real. But, they gave me pain pills. I called the doc. I made sure that when I come out, I got something, so some pain pills. And he goes, "Okay, all right, you got pain pills." I go, "Okay." So I know I had a backup. I go, "I haven't taken any pain pills at all. I had not taken one. I had those pain pills for about 3 weeks now. Not one."
So how much pain were you in? What was your pain level from 1 to 3?
I hate when they do that. That was the dumbest question they ever asked me. What is your pain? Not you. I mean, the nurse will ask you that when they sign you in. They would ask you that.
You
go, "Sir,
you're going to say 10 so you can get it."
I said, "Yeah, I don't know." One time I said one because I thought, that's what it is. I should have said 10.
Right.
So she asked me that. "What was your pain level?" I go, "What are you talking about? How much pain can you withstand?" I go, "None." She goes, "Well, can you put down a number?" "No. Right now, just looking at you, I hurt." She goes, "So you're..." I'm 5 years old. I'm difficult. I'm scared. "Now," she goes, "well, can you put down a number?" I go, "Well, what is the greatest one?" She goes, like you were saying, 10. 15. She just looked at me and she says, "Okay, cool." And basically, they started looking at me like I was a challenged patient, like this guy, maybe he's mentally not there. And I understand people get nervous, but this guy is just off the chart. "I'm going to put this here. I'm going to put 10. I go, "Yeah, right. Touch me right now." And she touched me. I go, "Ah!" She goes, "What was that?" I go, "Oh, God, the pain." She started laughing. She goes, "This is very serious, sir. You can't, I can't just touch you. You're screaming. This is very serious." So, I did not get addicted because this. Now, I did have some dental thing I was going to do, and I know I had to. And back in my mind, I have the pain pills, and I don't want to take them. And I'm wondering the personality. That if you're in that pain, I can't get mad at you, but they don't understand with this new thing where they give you 5 pills that you take you home with, maybe 10, that they will end soon by the end of the week. Then what? And you're forcing me to go in the street. How many people are forced to go in the street now? Normally they wouldn't because of the new law that they can only give you 5 tablets. I mean, give me prescription and then take my black ass to rehab. I don't care. Get rid of this frickin' pain. So now you're not giving me no tablets. I'm in the street. I'm talking to Willie here. And Willie's saying, I got a friend who knows a friend who knows a friend who's a chemistry guy in high school. And I'm taking this shit. So we go back to Matthew. Nobody cares about my thing. I'm just saying we're going to talk about Matthew Perry, but we're going to talk about how can this guy get from one point to a starving actor to making $1 million a week, and he starts drinking and start taking – what was wrong with him? What was inside of him that he could not have peace with? And could this be something that we all have? That's why we're here. Oh, lovely Melissa. Hello, lovely Melissa.
Good afternoon.
Hello, lovely Melissa.
Oh,
good
afternoon. But Melissa, it is a problem, though. When they busted these pharmacists and they busted these doctors back in the day because they're prescribing Oxycontin and so on and so forth, these people were getting hooked. And then they got busted, and they started suing the pharmaceutical companies, and pharmaceutical companies says, and the doctors are being held responsible because of malpractice, and the doctors are saying, okay, I'm going to send you home with 5 tablets. Okay, you get 5 tablets, and they are painkillers, and all of a sudden they're gone. They're not going to give you another prescription. I'm in the street now, Melissa. I'm scoring shit. How true is that? Is that a good possibility?
Not up from 10 pills.
Okay.
They're looking for
really?
The, it, what happens, it becomes physically addictive after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people want it. It's a literally physically addictive.
Mm.
So
Melissa, are you saying, yeah, Melissa, are you saying that even though they may not be in pain, they're still addicted to the drug itself?
Yeah,
mm.
Yeah,
mm.
And to come out of, they go through withdrawals and they vomit and they can't stop having diarrhea and they shake and they have hallucinations. It's terrible. They don't want to
feel
that way.
Well, they say here, because we're going to go in the form of what kind of personality. Melissa has a strong personality. Laverne has a strong personality, but she's spiritual. These are the guidelines. These are the safety mechanisms that one has that you don't get past that other level, you know what I mean?
But
we
can,
have
I,
certain...
can I correct you?
Sure.
Can I correct you?
Sure.
I may have a strong personality, but I am addicted to cigarette smoking.
Okay.
Physical.
Okay.
And mental.
Is it? And I, you
and
know
what?
I call an option here on her. I call timeout because I know Laverne. We have talked. You can go, if you're doing something, if you're doing this, you can go a while without smoking a cigarette. Am I correct?
Yeah, if I'm busy, yes.
Okay. Then what is it? Then what is the addiction then?
When I think about it, if I, say for instance, like if I go and help distribute food, now I might do that for like 2 to 3 hours, and I don't
right.
think about a cigarette, but soon as my mind clicked back to that cigarette, that's when I want it. And but that'd be after, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing.
Now, is it? And help me out, Melissa, because I'm talking to Laverne. Now, when I tried to stop and everything, and then I realized something, because I'm an intelligent man, I don't put it on this radio, I lose my audience. Yeah. What I'm saying, there are some people, and I hate to say it, some people like to smoke. They like it. I realized when I quit and everything, I missed it. It wasn't because it was so much addictive. It's that I like to do it. I like smoking.
I think it's both. I think it's both.
You think?
I think
it is?
Addictive. I think it's addictive, yet you like smoking.
Right.
But see,
right.
if you were to have a, say for instance, a health scare, then
yeah.
that'll knock that liking it out. I mean, You still may, you know, want it from time to time, but you're quickly, you know, to quit.
Sure.
And stop liking it too.
Well, why do I have to have a health scare or something like this and say, okay, I'm done? Cindy did
because
it.
Because you liked it.
That's what I'm saying. My girlfriend was a smoker, almost a pack a day with me. And what made her quit, and she quit, she stopped, and she hasn't picked a cigarette up in 12 years. But what made her quit is that at that time in California, cigarettes were like $5.50 a pack at that time. And she was smoking when it was like $4.10, $4.05. You know what I'm saying? And she says, I am not going to pay $5 for a pack of cigarettes. I'm not going to do it. And she quit. Let alone paying $10 that we're in here in California. And sometimes it's $12, believe it or not. But let alone, and she didn't pick it up later. Now, see, addiction to me is like, you can't do that. If you're addicted, you just got to have it. It's part of you, right? Or am I reading addiction wrong here? It's like, you just got to have it.
I think her will was greater to not to pay that amount to I think her will was greater as far as not paying that amount over the addiction itself.
Could be. But she might have been in the category as I was smoking cigarettes because I enjoy it. This is what I do. If it was video games, let me have a cigarette. If it was something she had to do that she had some thought she had to do to a puzzle or something, she'll light up a cigarette. You know what I mean? It's one of those. It was almost part of her other arm. It's like, okay, I got a puzzle or I got to figure this out. Give me a cigarette. It was one of those. But if she could quit just cold turkey like that, would that have been an addiction? Even though she's been smoking for like 20 years at that time, is it because she just liked it or was it an addiction? That's all I'm trying to figure out.
Oh.
Because if you just quit like that, it could be in it. You think so?
I think so. Because it was at one time I used to smoke pot. I mean, every day for years. But when I could no longer afford it, I stopped it just like that.
Okay. Huh.
Now, I'm not going to say... You know, I wouldn't go as far as to say pot was addictive as more than a want. But I don't know, but I just use that as that example. But I don't know if they just put them in the same category or not. I don't know.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's just say, let me put you in a, you know I put everybody in this scenario. You know I do. Let's just say all of a sudden something happened. You cannot afford cigarettes anymore. You're craving one because you're new to not smoking. And somebody pulls out a cigarette and asks you to do a sexual act for that cigarette. Would you do it?
Oh, no.
No.
That don't make you do that.
Did you hear Melissa? No. I know.
That's not that kind of addiction.
Really? Now,
no.
Okay. Well, then we're going here. Let's do another scenario. Let's say you're addicted to Oxycontin, or you're addicted to Valium, or you're addicted to one of these things. You know what I'm saying? Are you thinking young women are out there to – now, it's no secret that back in the day we used to call them pimps and prostitutes. We don't call them pimps and prostitutes anymore because now it's called sex trafficking to take out the pimp. We're going after you, pimp. It's a great idea. We're going after you, pimp, because you're sex trafficking now. That's federal crime. So we're taking out the pimp, and we're calling it sex trafficking. So we knew that they would get these girls addicted to coke, crack, and whatever. That's what sends them out in the street. To get their fix, am I correct? That was majority of the time that they're working the streets because they're strung out. So if I had a bag of cocaine or Valium or this, do you guys think that if I said somebody who's an addict and no longer could afford it, and I waived that tablet, six tablets of Valium or whatever, or fentanyl for a sex act, would they do it?
Yes, some would. Some wouldn't.
Yeah, because I don't know about that.
That's addiction. So if you're not going to do a sex act for a cigarette, I know it sounds ridiculous, we're trying to put it in a category of maybe you don't have an addiction. Maybe you have a want. Maybe you like smoking. Maybe it does something. Maybe it relaxes you. Maybe it's cool. You know what I mean? But I think you could do without it. If something happened, like you said, a health scare, and they said, well, Laverne, you got a health scare. I got a feeling you'll stop.
Right.
So if you could stop like that, is that an addiction?
Yes.
That's,
but your,
is
your
it really?
Fear, your fear of your health will be greater than that addiction.
Because I'm thinking addiction you can't stop, no matter what. I think it's life. I think it's
Well, it's not
life.
Only just drugs. People can be addicted to food.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's
oh,
true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, it says here. Here.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
go ahead. Sorry,
it says here's the kind of personality. Addiction is a neuropsychological disorder. It's it's by a persistent and intense urge to engage in certain behaviors, often uses of a drug despite substantial harm and other negative consequences. That's what they're saying with addiction is, and these are addiction personalities. We'll get back to Matthew Perry, I promise. The personality traits most often associated with high risk of addiction, see if you have this personality, willingness to take risk. If you are a kind of person, we had this, and the reason we had this talk, I got to go back. We had a show about possession with the Catholic religion, demons and everything. We had clergy on the show, and we asked who are the people who are most likely to get possessed by the devil, if you believe in possession. And the people who are most likely to get possessed are the people who will be the clergy and the people who believe in it or work in that area. Those are the people who are most likely to get possessed. So they're saying here the people who are most likely to be high risk of addiction is willing to take risk. And I don't understand that. Why would that be willing to take risk? Well, I guess let me try that, or I dare you, or I'm curious, and you take that risk knowing that it could be wrong. I guess it means that, right? So they're saying that kind of personality.
Dangerous?
Hmm?
Would it be dangerous risks?
Could be. They just said risk, knowing that it can hurt you, but you're willing to take that risk.
So dangerous. Yeah.
It doesn't specify dangerous. It says willingness to take
risk. Yeah, but
risk.
It said, listen, read it again. Mm-hmm. Read it again.
The personality traits most often associated with high risk of addiction includes, and then it has those bullet points. One says willingness to take risk.
Even if, read it.
It doesn't say even with. It just says
even
if
it's dangerous or could hurt you.
No. I added that. It didn't say it.
So it's
I was trying to specify.
People take risks in business and blah, blah, blah. It's engaging in taking
risks. And those are the people who are
usually
alcoholics. Those are the people who want to have a drink or two. People who take risk in business, usually their traits are they have something like alcohol going on with them, or they have a scotch after that, or they indulge, and maybe they buy a sports car that can they drive 120 miles an hour in the middle of the night. You know, those kind of people, you know, high octane
well,
people.
Driving that speed is risky behavior, dangerous behavior. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you the most dangerous behavior. You guys are gonna go, whoa, shut up, Brian, with that voice. The most dangerous high risk, I'm saying, is being an Uber driver. Done.
Oh, shut up, Brian.
I know. But think about it. Think about it. That's high risk. You have people.
If you call that high risk, if you call that high risk, anything could be high risk then.
Well, you have strangers coming into your car. They're in back of you. You have no idea who they are. There has been stories about women crying rape and you touch me and you abuse me, people doing things in your car. You don't know who you're picking up.
What about, so that could be a taxi driver.
Same thing.
That could be.
Bus driver.
Yes.
Yes.
That can go for a lot of things.
But see, the thing about it is Uber drivers, and I know a lot of them, and they had never had a problem. I'm just saying this on my own imagination, okay, that things, I got these things could go wrong, that people are basically morons and they don't behave. I'm just saying that you have no idea who is getting in, because when you're an Uber driver or Lyft driver, whatever driver you want to be, this is a voluntary thing for you to do on your own. You volunteer this. Being a taxi driver, being a bus driver, that's your job to feed your family. But taking a risk of saying, I decide to take my car and use it as a taxi and pick up strangers that I don't know at 12 midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, this is what I choose to do. It's high-risk personality.
To pay your bills to feed your family.
I understand, sweetheart. I understand. I understand that.
Why is it different being a cab driver or a bus driver?
Because I think, the cab drivers, and I was one for exactly 8 hours, and then I had to turn my cab in for unruly behavior. Who would guess? They have backup. They have documentation. It's a company that they're associated with. Hear me out. I know what you're going to say. I hear what you're saying. But mostly Uber, you're independent driver.
It to make money.
I understand. I mean,
what about being a police officer, a fireman?
Again, people choose to be the personality trait to become a police officer. There is when you have the military personality and you want to be a control and you like the adrenaline and you like the, okay, those are risks too. But I just use that as an example. I didn't say I'm saying that's the most situation that you could be put into. I think it's high risk in my own opinion. I don't have the personality to do it.
Job,
I get paranoid.
Could be a high risk. I think any job or occupation could be a high risk.
How about the guy who washes those windows on the buildings way up high? Those windows, like 12-story buildings, and he's up there? Wow.
People that work with these high-powered machines.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of things that what were we talking about?
Just waking up is being high
risk. I'm
just waking up is high risk.
Just waking up.
I changed my mind. You know what I think is number one high risk? These people, we call it California trials. I don't know what you guys call it. These people who volunteer to take this experimental medicine, and they call it trials, and they pay, like give you $1,500 or $500 to do it, and you get paid to do these experimental drugs. You guys, I know I'm going back to Matthew Perry. I was watching something the other night. I wanted to play it on the air because you would never believe this. So they were talking. It was some cancer medicine that was coming on. It's a commercials now. Late at night, all I see is these kind of things. So it's like this person all happy and everything, and they're older, and they're wheeling them out, and they're sniffing the daisies. Going, look how happy that person. I don't know the name of the drugs. I'm going to make it up, but I'm going to tell you something. Some of the side effects I'm not making up. So the person's all happy, go, look at them. And you hear the soft narration voice, you get a long life, and she's so happy. Yeah, look how happy she is. Then they tell you about the side effects. Side effects is death. I'm not kidding you. I swear to God, I'm not kidding. I go, what? Death, early death. That's a side effect. And then loss of eyesight. I'm not kidding you. Loss of vision, what? Dizziness. Yeah, I mean, it got worse as it went on. Loss of thought. And then one was basically you can't talk, a loss of speech. And then it says something like you would be driving a car or whatever and you won't even know where you've been and why you're in a car. I'm going,
I like
what?
That.
They went all this for about a good 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they showed the lady happy. Oh, look at her picking the daisies. Well, talk to your doctor, and you can't get this. And she's all happy. I'm going, she doesn't even know who she is. What the hell? I mean, you got to really look at the side effects in this bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome. The first thing is, the guy goes, well, and the cause of side effects is death. What? I'm stopping at death. What the fuck are we going to go?
I know.
Here's Matthew Perry. He did an interview with Diane Sawyer. Here it goes in his own words. Here we go, Matthew Perry, on his new book, his Tell My Story.
That smile, that one-of-a-kind charm, those Chandler wisecracks. Matthew Perry.
Oh, it's Diane Sawyer. Nice to see you.
Loved, adored by me.
What did he say? Oh, Diane Sawyer. And he's well? Listen how he says Diane's. Listen how he says Diane Sawyer. No, seriously. Listen to how he said it.
Oh, it's Diane Sawyer. Nice.
This is when he's well. Oh, Diane Sawyer. Oh, shit, this is not going to go well. Well, he's back.
Wow.
We're so inappropriate. It was like, okay, he's telling his story, he's well. And as soon as he opens his mouth, her name is Diane Sawyer. Diane Sawyer is her name. Listen to how he pronounces her name when he comes to the door.
Oh, it's Diane Sawyer. Nice.
We should. Wow. Did you guys hear what I heard?
I didn't.
You didn't hear it? Listen to how he.
No,
her name is Diane Sawyer.
Diane Sawyer.
No. Okay. I'm sorry. Maybe it's me, but I think he mispronounced her name. Listen again.
Okay.
Oh, it's Diane Sawyer. Nice to see you.
Diane Sawyer? Is it me? Or are you guys hearing the same thing?
I don't know. Maybe because Diane Sawyer's in my head. That's what I hear. I don't know.
Okay, what did you hear, Melissa?
The more you played it, the clearer it got.
What did you? Okay, I'll try it one more time. Listen. Oh, you heard Diane Sawyer? You heard Melissa?
Yeah.
I heard him mispronounce it. Let me try it again.
Matthew.
Okay.
Perry.
Oh, it's Diane Sawyer. Nice to see you.
He's not slurring. No.
Okay. I wish that could be played back in slow motion, but yeah. Okay. I can see why you.
One more time. See if he's slurring. One more time.
Matthew Perry.
Oh, it's Diane Sawyer. Nice to see you.
Not that see. No slurs? It's just me?
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't hear no slur, but then I don't know if I heard him say Diane Sawyer.
Right. He did not say Diane. Sawyer. Okay, let's hear him talk. Here we go.
Loved, adored by millions and millions. Now he's finally ready to tell you the story behind that smile. Secrets kill you. Secrets kill people like me. To the world outside, it seemed like a perfect dream life.
Number one movie, number one television show. At the time, I should have been the toast of the town. I was in a dark room meeting with nothing but drug dealers and completely alone.
Success, fame, and a bone-crushing struggle with addiction.
You start with a thunderclap. First page. Hi, my name is Matthew, although you may know me by another name. My friends call me Maddie, and I should be dead.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Emotional, raw, brutally honest.
You're on methadone, Xanax, full quart of vodka a day?
55 Vicodin a day.
55?
Yeah. What he has never before shared.
I was in a coma and, you know, escaped death really narrowing on Friends?
You said there were six friends. One of them was sick.
Yeah. Behind the scenes on set and the friends who are trying to help.
Jennifer, again, yeah. And she says, we know you were drinking.
Yeah. Imagine how scary a moment that was. She was the one that reached out the most. You know, I'm really grateful to her for that. And why now? It was important to me to do something that would help people.
The Diane Sawyer interview.
Okay, we'll do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again tomorrow.
Oh,
yeah.
Only okay. Different.
Yeah. But ask the same question.
Matthew Perry, the interview everyone will be talking about. Friday night, October 28th at 8, 7 Central on ABC. And
wow. Friday, October, did it already happen? Oh, no. It's happening this Friday. That's the interview.
Oh, wow.
That's the interview.
I will not be watching that.
You
won't?
Probably
ABC.
She's on ABC. It's October 28th at 8 and 7 Central, 8 p.m. 7 Central. So I guess yours, when was it, 8, 9? I don't know when it'll be on with your
probably
time.
Probably 10, Laverne.
Probably 10.
They usually show up at 10, 9 or 10.
Yeah. Because, Laverne, you'll be able to hear this.
Chandler Wisecracks, Matthew Perry.
Oh, it's Diane Sawyer. Nice to see you.
Sorry out here. Come on, am I the only one? All right.
I think you. No, I don't know.
Did he slur a little bit? Did he slur a little bit, or is it just me?
It wasn't me. It sounded like he was a little surprised to see her or something. Said, "Oh, Diane Sawyer."
Yeah. As much as he drove to the studio, got his makeup on, knowing that she was waiting for him. Oh, I go through a white door. Oh, that's Sawyer. Here he is again. This is on the Today Show. It's a little bit more. You can hear him a little bit. He's making the rounds.
But he's making the tours. He's touring around.
Yes. And so here he is on Today Show. Matthew Perry gets candid on battling addiction while on Friends. Here we go.
His comedic timing's always impeccable.
Way to save your dignity, my name.
His sarcasm, legendary.
I went to that tanning place your wife suggested. Was that place The Sun?
But over the course of 10 seasons and 236 episodes, Matthew Perry, who at one point famously made $1 million an episode for Friends, was in a constant struggle with addiction.
He was hospitalized with complications from his addiction, and doctors actually gave him a 2% chance of living.
In an interview with People magazine, Perry talks about his upcoming memoir, Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. It's a no-holds-barred look at his three-decade struggle with drugs and alcohol.
He's not sugarcoating this. He's being brutally honest.
Perry was just 24 when he nabbed the role of Chandler Bing and says his addiction issues escalated with his sudden fame, writing, "If you gauge my weight from season to season, when I'm carrying weight, it's alcohol. When I am skinny, it's pills. When I have a goatee, it's lots of pills." His weight seesawing from 225 pounds to 128 pounds. The difference especially noticeable from the end of season 6.
Will you marry me?
To the beginning of season 7.
Monica and I are engaged.
At one point, Perry writes he was up to 55 pain pills a day. In a Friends reunion special last year, Perry says the self-inflicted pressure to get a laugh was crippling.
To me, I felt like I was going to die. If they didn't laugh.
If I didn't get the laugh I was supposed to get, I would freak out.
It would take you down.
Yeah.
He credits the show and his friend's family with helping him make it through. They were understanding and they were patient. And it could be said that doing the show saved me. Now at age 53, after 15 stints in rehab and 14 addiction-related surgeries, Perry tells People he is healthy and that he hopes his memoir will help others in a similar situation. People are suffering out there, and maybe if they hear a story from somebody they've seen on TV that's worse or the same as theirs, they'll be filled with hope. Perry says he can only write this book now because he finally feels he's safe from going to the dark side again. He also says he's in a good place to look for love. Mm-hmm. God bless him for sharing his story. Yeah. We've talked about it all the time on the show. When someone shares their story, pain, you know, health issues, you can save a life.
And you know, you don't know what anyone's going through. Like, we watched that show. We were like, he seems funny and fine. You have no idea the demons people are carrying. Wow.
It takes a lot of courage to tell that story.
And thank him for sharing.
Oh, blah, blah, blah. Your phony stuff. Shut up, bitches. Okay. I hate to be cynical, but I hate when they're on camera and go, oh, he's so brave and everything. Just shut up.
Him being on the show, what caused his addiction?
Sure.
Otherwise,
he couldn't afford it. If he was a starving actor, he couldn't afford those pills. And, you know, when we think about that shit, here's what we don't think about. Who is giving him access to those pills? See, nobody's thinking that. We're just hearing, I was on the 28 pills and I was taking this, I was taking. Who is giving them to you?
Well, I thought people was only set was giving it to him.
No.
He couldn't get them from the doctors.
Oh. I don't know that case, but there are cases where you do bring in your people on a set and they do that. But again, how did you get that many pills available to you? What doctor is prescribing these pills, or where does this guy get them from? I mean, shouldn't we go after him? I mean, isn't there a crime that this guy had access to all these pills? I
just
go beyond it.
If you got the money, you can get it. And if, like I said, if you a big money maker, you can get them.
Sure.
And they might be jazzing you. You know, two men of these and so and so will hurt you, so and so and so. But if you are making them money, then it still could be easily accessible to get.
Well, Carol Counter, I don't know if people remember Carol Counter. He was Archie Bunker. He had a son, and his son overdosed on some drugs. God, it's been so long. Carol Conner was the first one that went after the drug dealer that provided his son with the drugs. And he was successful.
Well, was he successful because the guy was a drug dealer and that was illegal? Or was he successful because it caused his son's death? Because it was, consensual, you know, you asked, I gave.
Right.
Or was it his fame that made him successful? Do you know?
Well, I think when Carol Conner, who was a star Archie Bunker at the time, when you put a light on it and you shine a light on the people who live in the shadows, some people will scramble like cockroaches, but he had a name. That guy, as soon as Carol O'Connor went out, you know, the pressure of being a star and the news people going after, like, paparazzi, it was only inevitable. Like, the cop says, we can't let this go by. We have to punish this motherfucker. You know what I mean? You know, we knew a name. This guy's a drug dealer. He killed his son. He's making a point that we should go after the people who killed his son and make a case out of this. They had no choice to arrest it. I don't know if it's going to happen to regular people.
They do that now.
Do they do that? Really?
Oh, yes, they sure do.
Wow.
If you sell somebody drugs and they die and it's proved, you're going to prison.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yes.
Because you know, this was a TV show. This was a TV show, so I don't know how accurate it was. But do you remember if you watched the Temptations? And it wasn't Eddie Kendricks. Who was Paul? No.
Oh, I know what you're talking
I forgot
about.
Which was,
yeah, the lead singer.
His drug dealer was right there with him on set and everywhere.
Right, right, right. And it used to be.
And
he used to be in the open.
Bad with huh?
It used to be like that in the open. They were right there. They're the drug dealers on the set. Everybody knew who they were. They knew who they were.
Yep.
They knew exactly who they were. They had them in their trailer. They would be waiting in the trailer. It got as far as some filmmakers used to do. Let's say you had a star that was addicted to something. Let's say alcohol back in the day. They would put it in the budget for the movie. They would add it in the budget, his alcohol consumption. They say, well, this guy, you know, drinks this kind of alcohol, and he drinks about a bottle a day. So, and we're going to be filming for 6 months. They would filter that into the budget. They would do the same thing. They would do the same thing to the cocaine and the pills back in the day. The drug dealer, they would filter in their habit, and they would put that in the budget. I watched a documentary about Elvis on Netflix. I don't know if you guys saw it. It's a very interesting documentary. There's this one part where Elvis was walking. He got to be Fat Elvis, you know. He was already addicted to all these drugs. And he was walking to the stage, and he collapsed. And Colonel Parker says, I don't care what you have to do to that boy. He needs to be on that stage now. And that's how the attitude was. And they shot him up. That's how the attitude was with football. You shot him up. It was part of the game.
Yeah.
You shot him up.
Right. For them, the show must go on.
Exactly. So, and this is why I get annoyed where these actresses, these so-called actresses, and they're B actresses, and 30 years later, they're calling out somebody. Well, that director took a shower, and I had to sit right there. There's this one lady accused that, you know, what's his name right now, who's on trial. Well, he took a shower in front of me. And I had to wait right there while he was talking to me, and it was very abusive. Why didn't you leave, bitch? Well, I don't want to be blackballed. Then quit complaining, because it goes, you're meaning, you know, when you're, I say this. Acting is the same as back in the day. It was a freak circus, you know, it's a freak circus. You know, you're dealing with the dredge of life, the people, you know what I mean? You're dealing with the worst of the worst. And I say that with musicians, too. You know what I mean? And when I hear, and people, I still can't believe that people were okay with their teenage daughter going behind the scenes and meet their favorite rock star, dressing like they are, so they get backstage tickets. And I still can't believe that we're just saying, oh, you got backstage. Oh, how wonderful. You know, that we're not saying that the kid, a person, and these women, very rarely you're going to get a 22, 23-year-old woman back there. If you go backstage, you're getting 17, 18, maybe 16-year-old girls. And I can't believe there's no outrage about that. There was a song that I was really appalled at. I heard this song millions of times. I like this song. It's one of these classic songs. I don't remember who does it. I don't know. Melissa's good on songs. I hope you're good on songs too, Laverne. And we're at McDonald's, and the song says, she was 16 years old, da-da-da. And I don't remember the song and the artist. The only thing I remember, she was 16 years old. Da-da-da. Does it sound familiar? Da-da.
Not to me.
God. God, I'll probably remember it was. And he was singing about a 16-year-old. And that the love that he wants to give to her. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Shit. And then then after that song came on, because I was listening to the classic, then Joan Jett came on. I love rock and roll, you know, and if you listen to that song, he was 17 and he's going home with me. Yeah, me. And he was 17 years old, she was singing about. If you hear I love rock and roll in the beginning, I know people hate my show, and I'm playing this for you and me. So the songs, that you, I think, and not to mention we can go at Sweet Caroline, but okay, I Love Rocket. Just listen to I Love Rocket. Just, it's in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Okay, Joan and Jett, here we go, here we go. I'm just saying how, why aren't we, we're being this sensitive about film, why are we not paying attention to some of these lyrics that these perverts are singing about? She's 16, he's 15, he's 14. There's no outrage. Okay, here's the beginning of the song with Joan Jett. Here's the beginning, and listen to her, this. Here we go. I don't know what the hell that is. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay, here it is. Okay. See what I'm saying? We're not upset about these lyrics. He was 17, and he's going to be with me. Yeah, me.
Yeah, but how old was she supposed to be?
Joan Jett? At that, you could even,
yeah,
you know, was
singing about her.
No, in the song. In the song.
Exactly.
What?
She's not singing. You don't know if she's singing about herself. She probably didn't even write the song.
Well, it doesn't matter. But you're still singing about a 17-year-old boy. I'm not saying anything personally about Joan Jett. I'm not saying Joan Jett is dating young kid. I'm just saying the songs that we're hearing about 16-year-old girls, 17-year-old girls, and this, we don't say anything about. They're creep. I mean, now that we're looking back, I'm not saying Joan Jett did this. I'm just saying she sung the song.
Oh, you did. I didn't mean that. I meant, it's just a song, and she probably didn't even write it.
I understand it's just a song. But the message of the song is he's only 17.
The message.
One more time.
We won't outrage about, we won't listen in back then.
Right. I mean, there's a many. The Beatles did. All these rock and roll had songs like that. That song I was just singing to you, and I can't remember what it is. And I was listening to it, and I'm going, oh, my God, he's saying it plain that, you know, she's just 16 years old, da-da-da. And songs that we were singing back in the day, we didn't think anything of it. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. Let me see. Take them home.
Even I still couldn't understand the lyrics. To be honest with you,
but it's funny. I have never seen the video. If you guys get a chance, it's Joan Jett. I Love Rock and Roll. The official video. And it does have a boy mm-hmm. who's 17 years old just by the jukebox, and she's looking at him and everything. You can just see the video. And but I'm mm-hmm. just saying, a lot Beatles had a song like that, and a lot of people had songs like that because those are the girls who come backstage. And you rarely see a person being invited backstage if she's 35 years old, unless it's Tony Bennett. Because these teenage girls go, but we're not, there's no outrage about that. And I'm just saying, in the entertainment industry, when they do stupid things, shouldn't they be held accountable for being stupid and as a teaching point and not as a victim, and we want to uplift them and support them?
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, but I don't know if we could, you know, what it would do to hold them accountable. What would outcome be for holding them accountable? I don't know, because that sells. So
okay,
I don't
here's the song. Exactly. Okay, here's the song. Melissa, don't get mad at me. Here's the song. I know when Melissa's mad.
Melissa,
are you mad?
Melissa,
you there?
I'm right here. I told you. I don't know how this happened. We went from addiction to this shit.
I know, but listen to this, and we're going back. Listen to this. Listen to this song.
Okay.
I'm just saying that, yeah, we went from addiction to this, but this is interesting me. Wait, here's the song. Listen to the song. Tell me if you remember the song, but listen to the lyrics. Here we go. What I'm saying, I heard that song millions of times. It was the first time I listened to the lyrics. It's like, what? And it was a hit.
Yeah, we didn't listen to them back then. If it had a good beat, then we liked it. You know.
I know. I must have heard that song. Good beat. The words are, I got
angry.
Her drunk. Huh? What's up, Melissa?
The dogs are angry.
The dogs are angry. At least the hounds.
They're angry.
I know. Get back to the point, Brian. The dogs are angry. All right. I'm just making a point that these are songs that I heard.
You think because Matthew Perry was... I don't like it when they go on these tours, and obviously to make money. Okay, they're running around. You know, most drug addicts don't live like him, did live like him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, how did he blow his ass up? You know, you know what causes major constipation when people take opiates?
Of course, that's what happened to Elvis. Well, I don't know. I'll read it. But these are the personality traits most often associated with high risk of addiction includes. Are you one of them? Willingness to take risk. Adventurous people. Obsessive and or compulsive behaviors. Disconnected people. Apathetic people. Now, it's so general. These things are so general that it could be anything. Okay? So when I look at these things, they make it so general. Okay? I mean, willing to take risks. What is that, ride a bicycle? What is that, dating? Going on a blind date? You don't know who he is, so you're going to take a risk. I mean, what is that? You know what I'm trying to say? It's so general.
I knew it said that when he was a teenager, I knew him very well, and he had addictive problems after. And one time he lit himself, wrapped himself up in toilet paper and put gas all over himself and ran around. That was risky behavior, huh?
No, crazy. I wouldn't call that risky.
Risky.
I go beyond that. He went to another level.
Like a mental health problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know why he used to do it?
I think we went beyond risky. Dude, that guy should be
He wanted to be noticed. He wanted to be accepted. He wanted to
I
be
see
cool.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
But he was hot, huh?
He was hot.
He said he wanted to be cool.
Yeah.
He made it seem
no,
hot.
You know what I mean?
Cool.
Like, he was like, to be with everybody think he was like badass and, right?
Right. I mean, like Laverne said, if it had a good song, it'd be cool. I wouldn't even look.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That was a good beat.
But yeah, that's.
But you know what? Y'all know
yeah.
what I feel. I don't feel sorry for these. I don't mean sorry. I mean, I don't feel. What's the word for these actors and actresses?
I think you said it right. I don't feel sorry for them at all either. I think
I think the word
right
I'm trying to use though. It's not sorry
yeah.
because see they experience a whole lot to be where they are, to become a household
yeah.
word. So, you
yeah.
know, they may have psychological a lot of psychological problems.
And you know, I don't buy
trauma.
The... True.
Trauma.
What?
Yeah,
oh,
that's
I thought
true.
Trauma.
Trauma.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
cool. Melissa said it right, yeah. But,
and
I don't
know.
Buy that I had a... I had a disconnected childhood. My mama wasn't there. My daddy wasn't there. That's why I became this. No, it's not that. I don't buy it. It says here, an addictive personality, is it a myth? Okay, you guys, this is coming from a doctor. Do you think addictive personality is a myth? What do you think, Laverne? What do you think, Melissa? Is it a myth?
That they're born
no.
that way?
Hmm?
Right.
This is a specialist who says that, ask you, are there such a thing as really addictive personalities? Is addictive personalities a myth? I mean, do you believe it's true or do you believe it's just a myth that someone has an
addictive
personality?
Personality.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, this person says, many addiction specialists, I didn't know there were, and health professionals believe that addictive personalities are a myth. In part, this is because addiction is a complex issue that affects all kinds of people, and I agree with them 100%. That's what when you take a person and tell them to get counseling and everything, it's like one minute this person is giving me counseling from the ghetto that I'm brought up in the streets in the hood, and then the next minute they're giving another counseling from a businessman who's a stockbroker on Wall Street. It's like, wait a minute, two different personality traits, two different things, two different forms of economic conditions, can their advice, and this person never been to the ghetto. This person never even been associated with black people. These person, maybe I'm the first black client they ever had. Can she give me advice? All of a sudden, this person went to school and she can handle every personality that comes to her, that's thrown to her or him as a therapist?
No, I don't think that one says it all.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. That's like, you know, and these charlatans who talk about when we go with Trump and everything. I'm staying with the story, Melissa. Don't worry, I'm not finished.
Oh,
I'm
God,
just saying these
don't.
People who are
don't
who
do
are
it.
Talking. No, but the. I
don't
got
do
you.
It.
I got you, sweetheart. These people were talking about, what I have to say, you know, they're talking about a personality, a celebrity, right? And you get these people on these shows, Access Hollywood, and they're a psychiatrist that's telling you about these people and they never seen them before. And they're giving you their theory of this person.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, come on. You should be drummed out of the medical profession. Why are you giving general advice about somebody or therapy that you're saying, well, it sounds like this person has a condition called blah, blah, blah. It's like, blah, blah, blah. You haven't even seen this person. that's yeah. Anyway, that's just my thing.
Like,
all right, here we go.
It's like I don't agree with a person's behavior goes back to their upbringing. Now, some it does, but I don't think everybody's behavior go back to the, and put it on the parents. I don't believe that.
I don't agree with it. I'm with you 100%. So Matthew Perry, as we're going back to him, he says this. So Matthew Perry, he pulled out of Don't Look Up After His Heart. Matthew Perry pulled out of Don't Look Up After His Heart, Stop for 5 minutes. Whatever. The French star was supposed to appear in Adam McKay's Netflix hit when a medical emergency precluded him from doing so. So, as reported by the Rolling Stones, Perry, 53, was set to play a Republican journalist in the upcoming film and had even shot a scene with Jonah Hill, when he was forced to exit over his health. In his forthcoming memoir, Friends, Lover, and Big Terrible Things, Perry wrote that the film, which has seen him share scenes with Oscar winner Meryl Streep, would have been the biggest movie I've ever gotten. So he had a heart attack, I guess. Perry was in rehab at the time of filming. When the actor went to the rehab center in Switzerland, he lied to his doctors about having severe stomach pain in order to get prescribed hydrocodone. Melissa, help me.
Yeah,
Oxycontin.
Oxycontin. That's what that means.
Yeah, but this is like hydrocodone? Codeine?
That's Vicodin.
Vicodin, you're absolutely right. It's an opioid used to treat pain as a cough suppressant. In fact, I was okay, he wrote. I still felt like I was constantly doing a sit-up, so it was very uncomfortable, but it wasn't pain. And in order to alleviate his discomfort, the doctors wanted Perry to undergo surgery to put some kind of weird mechanical device in my back. Whoa. The actor took the hydrocodone the night before his surgery when he was administered to propofol as an anesthesia
propofol?
Drug. Propofol.
Yeah. I think that's what killed Michael Jackson.
That's what killed him, yeah.
Mm.
He was administered propofol as an anesthesia drug during the procedure. A combination of the two medications stopped his heart. Perry wrote, I was given the shot at 11 a.m. I woke up 11 hours later in a different hospital. Apparently, the propofol has stopped my heart for 5 minutes. You know, I don't know if when you guys, last time you guys went to the doctor, but there's a big free thing you have to do to go to the doctor. I mean, when I went for my thing, I mean, it was like 2 days I could not eat I could not eat dairy, or I could not eat meat, or I could not drink water. 24 hours, I mean, there's one time it says you do not drink any water between blah, blah, blah. You need 8 hours of not drinking water because they're afraid that you're going to choke on the water that's in you. I mean, there's a lot of steps you got to go through before you get there. This guy was taking Oxycontin or whatever, didn't even tell the doctors. He continued, it wasn't a heart attack. I didn't flatline, but nothing had been beating. I was told that some beefy swish guy really didn't want the guy from Friends dying on his table and did CPR on me for the full 5 minutes, beating and pounding my chest. If I hadn't been on Friends, would he have stopped at 3 minutes? Did Friends save my life again? Perry said he broke eight ribs due to the strenuous CPR. Eight ribs. Eight ribs. Did you know that Matthew Perry was dating Julia Roberts in the 90s? That's all, just a little tidbit.
No, but is he suing?
No, he's thankful they saved his life. The actor said that he was in too much pain after the incident to continue filming Don't Look Up, that's the name of the film, calling the decision to exit the project heartbreaking. And then it goes on, if you know somebody with drug addiction. He says that he spent $9 million to get sober. It says he was driven to rehab in a pickup truck after filming Chandler and Monica's wedding on Friends. So when you see him getting married, that one episode where he got married to Monica, after the filming, he was driven to rehab in a pickup truck.
Oh, wow.
What would that $9 million for? I mean,
he said he spent $9 million to get sober. I guess he went to a rehab center. These rehab centers are they rip you off, but they're very expensive. I mean, they have one in Malibu that is just expensive.
One of them he was in Switzerland, he said.
Yeah. Oh, man. You guys don't care about Kim Kardashian wore a see-through dress for her birthday, to celebrate her birthday? Do you care?
Mm.
She was totally naked underneath this dress. Kim marked her latest trip with this, and she got a tan, and she wanted to show everybody her body. Oh, here's a dress, a see-through, but for the pictures, she wore a bra. But, hey, you know, if you can get away with it, why not, right? I mean, are we really that upset about somebody being naked? That's it.
Like, who cares?
Oh, Kim Kardashian?
Yeah.
So can you imagine your colon exploding because you've taken so much stuff and he had a bag. I don't have the story, but he had two bags, a colostomy bag, and he had another bag that he had to wear. And he doesn't wear the bag anymore. I guess it reversed or they repaired his colon. He's lucky.
Yeah. He is lucky. He's very lucky.
That's it. That's it, folks. I mean,
I bet you if he didn't have the money, they wouldn't have reversed it.
He'd be wearing that damn bag.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he would.
Money talks.
He would. I don't know how much money. Well, I do know that he still has tons of money. I mean, I'm sure they all signed a deal and they all get. I see Friends all night. It's on one channel. It's like a 4-hour block on Friends every night.
What's
and
they call them? Residual, right?
Yeah, residuals. Yeah. I mean, they paid Seinfeld billions of dollars to run his residual, so I'm sure these guys got a hunk of change, you know. I don't want to go into this, but Matthew Perry, he reveals the heartbreaking reason behind his breakup with Julia Roberts. I think she's annoying, especially her laugh. Julia had been offered the post-Super Bowl episode in season 2, and she would only do the show if she could be in my storyline. That's what Matthew said. He revealed in an excerpt in the paper. And he says, let me say this again. She would only do the show if she could be in my storyline. Was I having a good year or what? But first I had to woo her. In order to win her over, Perry sent 3 dozen roses and said how excited he was for her to be on the show. Roberts then challenged him to adequately explain quantum physics to her if she really wanted her to be on the show and to date her. The following day, I sent her a paper all about wave particle duality and the uncertainty principle entanglement, and only some of is metaphysical, Perry wrote. Whatever he said, the Chandler Bing charm worked. Not only did Julia agree to do the show, but she also sent me a gift. It was bagels, lots of bagels. I did let her in, both figuratively and literally, and the relationship began. We would only be a couple by the time we started filming this Friends Super Bowl episode. And in the episode titled The One After the Super Bowl, Robert plays Susie Underpants Moss, a former elementary school classmate of Chandler who has one thing on her mind, revenge, back in the day. Chandler had lifted up her skirt during a school play, and after meeting adult Chandler, Susie woos him and proceeds to steal his clothes from him in a very public setting. 2 months after Perry and Roberts were together in real life, Perry's insecurities coupled with his addiction got the best of him, and he called the relationship off. Dating Julia Roberts had been too much for me. I had been constantly certain that she was going to break up with me, he explained. And why was she not? I was not enough. I could never be enough. I was broken, bent, unlovable. So instead of facing the inevitable agony of losing her, I broke up with this beautiful, brilliant Julia Roberts. He noted that he felt that Roberts was slumming it with him and that she was widely confused when he broke things off. I can't begin to describe the look of confusion on her face, he wrote. This isn't the first time Perry had been open about his struggle with addiction during his peak on Friends. The star revealed that probably spent $9 million or something trying to get sober in a new interview. Also detailed the excruciating physical toll addiction took on his body, which includes a slew of medical calamities in 2018 of pneumonia and exploded colon. 2 weeks in a coma, 9 months with a colostomy bag, and over a dozen stomach surgeries. A dozen stomach surgeries? Wow.
Wow.
So, what have we learned? What have we learned here? So, what's the lesson learned?
5,000 like it in a day.
I would be surprised that if all those surgeries still wasn't fatal a little bit down the road.
Well, this is a guy who felt like he didn't deserve his fame. You know, there was somebody who said it. It was a woman. It was an actress. I can't remember who said it. That she says that I don't deserve this fame, and I'm thinking that somebody's going to find out about me that I'm not this talented, and that they're going to hold me to the carpet that I'm just faking it, and that sooner, you know what I mean? And she was very, I forgot who it was. This guy said the same thing.
Well,
I'm not worthy.
What was she telling the truth, though?
That's how she felt about herself. And he seemed like that's how he felt about himself with Julia Roberts, that he's not worthy and that he's unlovable. And she's going to eventually break my heart. And this is when he was all going through rehab and all this bullshit.
Wow.
Some people don't think they're deserving enough. Or they deserve love. That's the honest God truth. There are some people in this world that says, you know what? I don't deserve this. I don't deserve to be successful. Maybe I'm faking it, and they're going to find out sooner or later, and I'm so afraid when they find out that I'm going to destroy my career. Or I'm going to destroy my marriage or my relationship. Not because of them. It's because they're not worthy enough to have such a good person. See, I don't have those feelings. With me is you get what you get. These are things, and we're going to end the show with this. Have you ever heard of these things? These are things that, at first I started saying, it'll never happen to us, but that's kind of cynical. Have you ever heard of a hotel butler? They do exist.
No, I haven't.
You never heard of a hotel butler?
No.
They do. Well, these are 12, well, what a hotel butler is, that you get these people, the 1% of people, you know, that need to be catered to, that they specify certain things. So the staff will assign someone to you. Whatever you need, they will get, is one of those things. So they call them like a butler.
Oh, okay.
So if you're a big star, you're Julia Roberts, and she doesn't want to be going down to the lobby or whatever, they will assign a staff member to you. So whatever you want, they will go down, you know, they order your food, whatever. You get it. Well, these are the 12 shocking things this person learned as working as a butler at a Plaza Hotel. I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you guys will think it's interesting. There's one scene where There was a person who came in, and she wanted to take a bath. Okay, another common request for a butler team is to draw a bath with a signature blend of salt, oil, and roses, especially during the colder months of the year. But the butler's duties aren't necessarily complete once the tub is full. So BAL, B-A-L, the Plaza Resident Bath Time Specialist, as all hotels have, a bath time specialist, said that 95% of the time he has to remain within arm's reach as bather suds himself up. Most of them, he said, want more hot water or scented oil and are happy to keep him on hand while they relax in the nude. He is also left to pull the plug from the drain elbow deep in leftover water. That's his job. And it gets weirder. One of my butler colleagues at a previous job in London was asked to ship in and set up a guest order of fresh oysters in the bathtub. He filled the tub with ice and laid oysters out, only to discover that the guest wanted the oysters placed in the tub around his soaking body. Eventually, the client seemed satisfied. He purchased the room next door for his butler so he could always be near.
Jeez.
These are what people do. Can you imagine?
I can imagine the oil and the rose petals and the salt, but the oysters floating around you?
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
It says, every day the staff would, despite the overwhelming regularity of guest behavior, travelers can mystify even the most experienced of butlers. During my shift, lobster shells kept appearing in the fountain of the hotel interior. Every day the staff would fish them out only to find a new one a few hours later. It turned out that a Middle Eastern prince was ordering cooked lobster from room service for every meal and then throwing the empty shells out the window to land in front of the fountain below. Emma asked him to stop nicely, but pieced together the mystery only on the day of his departure. After a time, a woman called Emma, I guess, I don't know who Emma, hysterically crying as though her husband died, and she just discovered the body. When Emma finally calmed down, she comprehended the real reason for the guest's tears. There was no more Kleenex in her suite, and her young daughter had been forced to blow her nose on the toilet paper.
That's funny.
Last one. Sex, drugs, and come again? At any hotel, request for drugs and prostitutes do happen, but not frequently. This guy named Bao is telling the story. Bao has been asked for drugs only two or three times in his 10 years at the Plaza, and he is careful to stick within the boundaries of the law. Condom needs are another story. Mujin, one of other butlers, always carries a pack with him, especially in the evening. On being called to fulfill one such late-night request, no one answered the door. After several knocks, he gently entered the room to find two guests in the go position waiting to be walked in on. For more interesting than sex and drugs are the ones who are more outlandish. Recently, Emma fielded a service call from a woman searching for some missing chocolate-covered blueberries which had fallen off a window ledge. Emma offered to obtain replacement for the same brand in store, but the guest was adamant about retrieving her exact snack. Emma and his security team, they traveled to the hotel's interior courtyard for hours, blueberry hunting to no avail. During my brief tenure, the weirdest request was from 2 liters of saline solution meant for a doctor's ailing wife who was presumably on the wrong side of a hangover. Okay, blah, 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 blah. Have you guys ever got raided by a minibar? And you actually ate from the minibar? I did. I thought I went with the hotel and ate the little peanuts and everything, and my bill was like $250.
Oh, my.
This person did the same thing. Their bill was $600 at the minibar.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Well, there
you go. And I think if that's your first time going, I think you can easily fall into that.
Hmm?
I think if that's your first time in a
yeah.
Hotel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I fell into that. I go, look, a little refrigerator. Oh, look how they stocked up. On the news site, scandal, Trump loyalists could sink Trump entire company as criminal trials going on. Who cares?
No.
Trump appeal and rape accusers' defamation suit gets fast-tracked. Interesting. Advice Commander who claims he raped her will be expedited by the District of Columbia's highest appeals court. There you go. Melissa,
no,
you cracked me up. You really cracked me up today. You know that, even though you got mad at me.
Yeah.
You got really mad at me.
I don't know why.
I'm
not mad at you. I'm not mad.
Okay.
You're imagining that.
Okay. That's about it. I'm just trying to. Oh, did you hear the latest on Kanye West? This motherfucker.
Kind of.
Last story. You're not going to believe. Here's another story, Laverne and Melissa, why people just have too much money, they're too bored, and they're just starting shit for no reason. Kanye West is still talking about the Jews, still upsetting the Jews.
Yes.
He's still doing it because he's fucking bored. Wait a minute. Is the guy who's dating his girl, Kim Kardashian, David Davidson, is he Jewish? I bet you he is.
I have no idea.
I don't even
know.
But
he seems to be jumping on the bandwagon of the person who shall remain nameless.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I know we can't even say that.
He said, "Say the name three times, and they'll jump in the studio." This is updated the 25th. Kanye West bag fumble continued today as he lost. Oh, his agent dropped him. By the way, he's losing his Adidas deal. Dropped him. A lot of the sponsorships are dropping him. He's immediately shutting down the sale of what was left of his Yeezy Gap inventory. The Gap dropped him. The Gap said this afternoon it took the website of Yeezy Gap offline and was taking all remaining merchandise out of its stores as a result of West's recent antics, which have included saying that George Floyd died of fentanyl overdose wearing a White Lives Matter shirt and defending it in a subsequently interview and making anti-Semitic remarks. Gap and the rapper, who now goes by Yee, broke off their brand partnerships. So the Gap got rid of it. You became a billionaire because of these sponsors? Guess what? They are leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, Yee's worst news came early this morning when Adidas announced it was terminating his deal with Yee. See, why do these people do this? Bring this on? They don't need to bring this. Adidas does not tolerate anti-Semitism and any other sorts of hate speech. Yet, Yee's recent comments and actions have been unacceptable, hateful, and dangerous, and they violate the company's value of diversity and inclusion. Mutual respect and fairness. This Germany company released him today, too. After a thorough review, the company has taken the decision to terminate the partnership with Yee immediately. End production of Yeezy-branded products and stop all payments to Yee and his companies. Adidas will stop the Adidas Yeezy business with immediate effect. The Adidas partnership should have the biggest impact on Yee's pockets, not to mention the company's Adidas warned investors in its statement that ending its deal with Yee likely means taking a hit of 250 million euros or about $246.5 million by current exchange rates to its profits in a fiscal year. Put another way, Adidas now sees Kanye West, a man who once said slavery was a choice or national television, so toxic that it would rather lose $250 million than to do business with him. It's safe to say it's among the larger bag fumbled in this history of hip-hop, Forbes, which just 2 years ago added Ye to its billionaire list, removed him early Tuesday, saying that the value of his Adidas was so great that he lost being on the Forbes list. That's how big his value was.
Wow.
So that
he didn't
Adidas
have to do this.
Too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it kicked him off the list. He is no longer a billionaire because of this. And he's just saying bullshit. Forbes said last week that Adidas had paid Ye about $220 million in royalties. $220 million in royalties. Can you imagine that? In royalties. From the Yeezy sneaker line.
It's hard for me to believe that he didn't know any better to make those statements and what it could cause as far as his career. So I think it's deeper than that, but I don't know what, you know, I don't know how far the rabbit hole it goes, but he has to be smarter than that.
He's just saying shit. He's bored. He's bored. He's bored. Saying that slavery was a choice. Yeah, Massa, it was either this or I work at 9 to 5 and I chose this.
He wasn't the only one that said that either. But go ahead.
I know. Okay. I didn't say that.
No, I'm saying someone else out here said the same thing. But go
somebody
ahead.
I think so. I heard somebody say that too. I forgot who it was. Another idiot. Tell those slaves that, you
know. I don't
know
if they were idiots or not, Brian. Is we just maybe not understood the reasoning and the cause of what he was trying to say. Do we know that? Because I don't. I mean, just to say it, you have to have a reason or some type of a belief of why you said that. But we don't understand why he said it.
Well, I'll tell you that. I'll pay you $220 million, okay, because you're just you. But then you come out and say, you know, I was reading the book, and I do believe in aliens and this and this and this and this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that we don't care what you believe, but knowing that you can lose a sponsor – because maybe some Christians don't believe it. Some Christians believe that Jesus was an alien. We can go down deep in that if you really want to. But knowing that you said that, you can lose some people. Would you say it? I mean, you don't have to say it to the press. You don't have to put it on your Twitter. You could talk to your friends and say, well, this is what I believe. You know what I mean? But why do you have to make that statement that you can lose millions of dollars?
I understand what you're saying. But sometimes, and it's just for me, sometimes you got to stand alone for what you believe. Now, it's I don't know. I don't know. I just believe he's just smarter than it. To make those statements. Yeah, they say he made them. Oh, you heard him. We hear him say them by his own mouth. But it's got to be something.
You're right.
Other than him, go ahead.
That's why I asked, is Kim Kardashian's new boyfriend Jewish? That's all. Davidson sounds Jewish to me. I really don't think his ego. See, Davidson, who was in SNL, he wasn't even a premier feature actor. He was a B actor in SNL. Once in a while they use him. He wasn't even a prime actor. And for him to lose Kardashian over this guy, and this guy's a billionaire and all this stuff, kind of stuff, sometimes your ego gets in the way. Anyway, but I agree with you. There's some reason why he's doing this. There's some mental reason why he's going up there and saying stupid shit to get to someone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Bob Woodward says right now, this is today, Trump told me something I never heard. That's what he said. So Bob Woodward is writing another book about Trump. Bob Woodward said, Trump told me something I never heard from any of the 10 presidents I ever covered. Really? You have 4 books on him. What did he tell you that he did not hear? What did he say? While talking with host John, what is it, a new book? Oh, yeah, his new audio book of Trump. Melissa, don't say it.
I'm here.
Woodward interviews revealed Trump's brain is a hot diaper mess. Diaper. What the hell? Woodward is releasing hours worth of interviews with Donald Trump and Politico Jack Schaefer. Argues that they show interviewing the former president is an exercise in futility. Schaefer begins by noting Woodward's well-earned reputation as blah, 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 blah. The interview is a hot diaper mess that mainly illustrates Trump's narcissism and willingness of ignorance. He really doesn't know anything, which is forgivable, but he also doesn't want to know anything, which isn't. The journalist then goes through multiple excerpts of Woodward's interview with Trump, including sections about the administration's response to the COVID-19 epidemic, or pandemic, I'm sorry. It's a hot diaper dump. Who describes a person?
You know what? What about Obama? What about what Obama did? He's a wet diaper. I did it. I said it.
You did say it.
There you go.
He doesn't know anything. But he's not interested in knowing anything. Let me just see. Bob, let me just see. I'm going to see if we can have one excerpt before we leave. No, Brian, no. I want to know. I don't want to hear no.
You're going to summon the devil.
Anti-book.
Here.
You're not going to anti-book. They're called
you know
the Trump.
Yeah. No, where'd you going to play a Trump tape?
Just his excerpts. And if you want to get the audio book, it's free. But the audio CD is going for $44.99.
Oh, my. I don't need it that bad.
I don't
the Trump
need it,
tape.
Period.
Here's a sample. I don't know if we have it, but here's a sample.
Mm-mm.
Mr. Woodward, the president.
Hi, Bob. My whole life has been deals. I've done great. Far greater than people understand. Well, I respect Putin. I think Putin likes me. I think I like him.
Law and order, Bob. Law and order.
Why don't you give me your taxes? No, seriously. I said to the king, King, you got to pass for protection. If it weren't for us, we had a very good chemistry together. We talked a lot. We could have talked. I will consider this one of my greatest achievements. Getting the scum out of government, and it's scum.
Sir, you're going to be judged by how you handle the virus.
I have done a tremendous amount for the black community, and honestly, I'm not feeling any love, because... Nothing scares me. If I was scared, I wouldn't be doing an interview with you today. I'd be under a table with my thumb in my mouth, okay?
Simon & Schuster Audio Originals presents The Trump Tapes. Bob Woodward's 20 interviews with President Donald Trump.
I hope you treat me better than Bush, because he made him look like a stupid moron, which he was.
It sounds like, I don't know if I would, $44 for that nonsense? Just silly,
uh-huh.
Stupid things Trump says? Okay. Woodward interviews, huh?
I'm sorry, because I was getting off the subject, so go ahead, finish what you were going to say.
Woodward interviews reveals Trump's brain is a hot diaper mess. His attempts to shake down the Ukrainian government for dirt on Joe Biden. Not true. And his relationship with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. Not true.
Fake news. Fake news.
Trump will not give a straight.
You're being, not being fair. Go to Fox News right now.
No. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Well, Stanny, we do it with love because I know you're listening. You'll listen to it in podcast.
You'll probably get a phone call.
But look, y'all,
have y'all heard they have a new Bible out called, and you can get it on Amazon, called the Queen James Bible?
No, yeah. I never heard that. Really?
Yeah, I just heard somebody mention it the other day, and they had pulled it up, you know, on Amazon.
It's called the Queen's James Bible? Instead of the King James?
Yes.
Was it written by a homosexual?
I don't know. I didn't give it all that much thought, but I might do a little research on it.
Do it.
Here it is right here. The Queen James Bible. Here, I wonder if I'm trying to see if there's a, hold on, see if there's an audio on it. There's no audio. Of course not. There's no audio on it. Read more. The Queen James Bible is based on the King James Bible. It's edited to prevent homophobic misrepresentation.
Oh.
All right, right there, I'm out. It's edited to prevent. If you look at the Bible, it's full of homosexuality going on in that Bible,
isn't it? It is. Mm.
So this is called the Gay Bible. You were right. You were so right, Laverne. You get a ding-dong for that. You were so right when you were right on with the gay stuff. Look at that.
Oh, I don't know if I'm sure you're doing that, but okay.
Well, it says here, they call it the Gay Bible. The Queen James Bible is the Gay Bible. They edited out the homosexual stuff that was in the Bible. Edited to prevent homophobic misrepresentation. It says homosexuality in the Bible. Homosexuality was first mentioned in the Bible in 1946 in the Revised Standard Version. There is no mention or reference to homosexuality in any Bible prior to this. Only interpretations have been made. The anti-LGBT Bible interpretations commonly cite only 8 verses in the Bible that interpret to mean homosexuality is a sin. 8 verses in a book of thousands. The Queen James Bible, that's what they call it, seeks to resolve in the Bible as it pertains to homosexuality. We edit those 8 verses in a way that makes homophobic interpretations impossible. Who is Queen James? It says here, the King James Bible is the most popular Bible of all time and arguably the most important English language document of all time. It is the brainchild and namesake of King James I, or King James I don't know, is it one, who wanted an English language Bible that all could own and read. KJV, as it's called, has been in print for over 400 years. Wow. And has brought more people to Christ than any other Bible translation, commonly known to biographers, but often surprising to most Christians. King James I was a well-known bisexual.
My dun, 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 dun. God. I'm not going to say that's not true.
A lot of us knew that. A lot of us believed that.
I didn't know that. He was a bisexual.
Yeah.
Though he did marry
King
a woman.
James.
King James. Queen James. Oh, so that's how it was, huh? they outed him.
He had murdered a woman, but he also had a tunnel built to go into his nephew's bedroom.
The way you say it, you know, Laverne, I know you said it seriously, but the way you narrated that, it is so in his nephew's bedroom.
That's what's said.
The way you said it, Melissa, it was just funny, wasn't it? And his nephew's bedroom. Wow.
You can do a book.
Wow. It says, although he did marry a woman, his many gay relationships were so well known that among some of his friends and court, he was known as Queen James in his great debt and honor that we name the Queen James Bible. The Queen James Bible is a big, fabulous Bible. It's fabulous.
Of course.
Do you think gay people own that word, fabulous? Or can we go back to being fabulous? You can't. Any man cannot say that word without being gay. Fabulous.
I never heard a heterosexual man say that.
I know. I know. That's my point. I know it. That is not in our language. Fabulous. It's just fabulous.
But like I said, in doing some of my studies, I heard that most kings were homosexuals anyway, and that's where they also got the term, not the term, but that's where Victoria's Secret came out.
Okay. Huh. I don't understand.
Well, let me think about it.
They were wearing Victoria's Secret's outfits, you think? Clothes?
No, they were homosexuals. They said most kings back then were homosexuals.
Right.
And okay, now I'm trying to put it together when you said Victoria's Secret.
You said it. I don't know where that came from.
Oh, you know what I think? You know what I think? Well, it's not think, but you can look it up because I could be wrong about this part, right?
Right.
Queen Victoria was a man.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And you know, she dressed as a woman.
And
that's
a secret?
Where Victoria's Secret came from.
Laverne, I don't know. That's
my God.
I don't know. That's a long way
before
to get there.
Before you count it out, before you count, discard it. Look at
it.
I could be wrong, but before I did, you described it.
Okay, I'm going to look up as Queen Victoria, a real Queen Victoria.
Victoria's, how did Victoria's Secret get its name?
Okay, I'll do that. I'm going to come up with a guy named Bob. How did Victoria? I'm typing
Secret.
With one finger. Victoria's Secret.
Okay. Get his name.
Get his name. Oh, here it is. How did Victoria's Secret get its name? Here we go. How did Victoria's Secret get its name, and what does it mean? The brand was named after Queen Victoria and referenced the taboo hidden nature of lingerie and underwear at the time. The company was started up by American businessman Roy Raymond, and his wife Gail. In 1977, Raymond borrowed $40,000 from family and $40,000 from a bank to establish Victoria's Secret, a store in which men could feel comfortable buying lingerie. The store was named in reference to Queen Victoria and the associated refinement of the Victoria era. Well, the secret was hidden underneath the clothes. Huh?
I see they're not saying what I'm saying, but if I ever run across that again,
you let me know. Okay, wait a minute. Yeah. Why is it called Victoria's Secret? He chose the name Victoria to invoke the propriety and respectability associated with the Victorian era. Outwardly refined, Victoria's Secret were hidden beneath in 1977 with $80,000 of savings and loans from a family. Raymond and his wife leased a space in a small shopping mall in Palo Alto, California, and Victoria's Secret was born.
Okay, I
why
can't
did
prove
Raymond
what I
choose
said.
The name Victoria, huh?
I said, I can't prove what I just said.
I know, but it's very entertaining.
It was entertaining.
Okay, that's why it's important to have your sources when you speak.
Could be. Could be. It could be. In this case, it could help. But that was a long story. Well, you know. Most of the kings were queens.
I even stopped your conversation for that.
You really did because I was rooting for you.
I was rooting for me too.
I know. Well, on that information, well, as of today, Victoria's Secret, her real name is Roy. That's who it is. Her real name is Roy. I want to thank you guys for coming in this late time. I mean, come on, it's 6 o'clock. It's almost 7 p.m. where you are. And there was a reason why I did this show.
Wait a minute. You said her real name was Roy.
Well, no. The people who did it, his wife and him, where is it at? The brand was named after Queen Victoria. So they named it after Queen Victoria. And they referenced the taboo hidden nature of lingerie and underwear at the time. The company was started up by an American businessman named Roy Raymond and his wife, Gail. Those are the two who started the business. Yeah.
Okay.
You saw an opening there, didn't you? Roy! I can get back in. I can get back into the back door. I know. I know. I was still rooting for you until I read it again. I want to thank the lovely and the beautiful Laverne and the lovely, beautiful Melissa. Thank you for the support. It's a late time. Believe it or not, people do listen to the podcast, and we'll get many listens here. But there's a reason I had to go up, and those two know it, and they will always know it, and you guys don't. That's too bad for you. You get what you get. But I know what they did, and I appreciate what they did. When I say they, I'm talking about the lovely Laverne and the lovely Melissa. I want to thank you guys for coming on and helping me out here. And I hope it was an entertaining show. I don't know until I get off the air and I think about it. But that's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. If there's anything I could recommend on Netflix, there's two things I can recommend. Hey, Laverne, did you ever see The Seventh Sign? Did you ever see it?
I did. And did you see Lou?
No, I haven't, kiddo. I'm sorry. I haven't seen it yet. I will
But
do
yes,
it.
I did watch The Seventh Sign.
What did you think? What's your review?
Well, for one, I have seen other movies that was very similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
But after watching that, I didn't get that much out of it. But I was wondering what made you, because you said it changed your life.
Just when he said, "Would you die for her?"
Uh huh.
Remember, he kept the narration where she was always in a sleep haze or something. She didn't know what he was talking about. And you could almost hear a baby cry or something. Would you die for her? I think I'm getting the words right. Am I correct?
Yeah, you are. You are. That's what he asked.
Right. And the reason it changed is that the same thing is when I was talking about when I was dating as a young man in the troubled times of AIDS and HIV and using unprotected sex. It's the same thing as you're going in and you're using unprotected sex, you could catch AIDS or HIV. So my interpretation is, would you die for this person? would you die for her? Because you don't know if she's going to give you AIDS or whatever, you know? So if you go in unprotected and you can come out with AIDS, you basically died for her.
Oh, that's what you got. Even though the storyline in the movie was the, like you said, she needed to die for her before her baby could be born.
Right.
Or if her baby wasn't born and she didn't say that she would die for them, then the whole apocalypse would be released. All the seals would be broken.
Right. I just took that phrase as into what my personality was, and to keep me from doing something stupid that can kill me, you know. And my thing was sex, so I like that phrase. Would you die for her? And that's what kept me healthy, because I've never caught anything. And people says, well, I mean, I know how the 80s were, and I wonder how the 90s were. How did you? And you were so sexually, irresponsible, maybe. How did you not? Those were the ages, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, everybody was sexually, well, not everybody, but most people were sexually irresponsible. So why did you all of a sudden protect yourself? And it's because of that movie, that one phrase in that movie, I would look at her, say, and I would look at her, what in my mind, would I die for her? Or the other thing would be, do I want her to be the mother of my child? It was two phrases that kept me from that. I didn't know this woman. She was drunk. She was this, you know, would I even want this woman? Meaning that if I did it without unprotected sex, could she get pregnant? And if she got pregnant, would I want this woman to be the mother of my child, you know, and be locked with this woman? So those are the two things that kept me from not having unprotected sex. So, yeah, that phrase saved my life. So it kept me the same. I'm wrapping it up.
Okay.
So that's what I meant by that. And a boy named Charlie Brown, the cartoon, a boy named Charlie Brown did the same thing. You ever see that one? I can't wait for Oliver, and I can't wait for Sean to see a boy named Charlie Brown. That saved my life.
Well, that may come on this month.
It might.
Or is it the Charlie Brown hit Halloween?
It's probably the Halloween.
Pumpkin.
The Great, yeah, there you go. There was
one. Yeah, the Great Pumpkin.
I love Melissa. she can fill in those blanks. She has a good memory. Really quickly about a boy named Charlie. A boy named Charlie Brown. If you've never seen a boy named Charlie Brown, this is the first time he started winning that spelling bee. He was a hero. He's doing it. Boy named Charlie Brown, his last thing. He finally made it to the final. Everybody was counting on the boy named Charlie Brown. So his last words were, if he could spell the word beagle, he will win. And everybody go, are you kidding me? Because that's how Snoopy is. Everybody started dancing. You can do it, Charlie Brown.
You know,
they're dancing and everything. He's going to do it. And he misspelled the word.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see everybody go, oh, what a blockhead. And he gets on the bus by himself. Everybody leaves. Nobody's around him. You know?
Uh-huh.
He gets off the bus. Nobody meets him. Nobody around.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes into his house, and you see him, and he just crawls into bed. He puts a cover over his face.
Poor Charlie Brown.
Three days go by, and Linus finally comes over his house. And I'm trying to see if I can get – I don't have it. Linus asks, well, Charlie Brown, we haven't seen you at school. And Charlie Brown said, I'm never going to school again. And I don't see you playing, Charlie. I'm never going to play again. You know, his house is all dark and the curtains are shut. And Charlie Brown is just there. And then Linus just sits there and go, you know, Charlie Brown. And my mother used to say this. And my mother used to say the same thing. My mother used to say, what's the worst thing that can happen? My mom used to say that, you know, and you're in trouble. But anyway, and so I'm sitting there, and I had a bad week. I forgot something happened. I think I lost a mowing gig, or it was something that I lost, and I felt really bad. And when I felt bad, I used to go to the movies. And I guess I went to the movies to get cheered up, and was a cartoon, a boy named Charlie Brown. So I related to him in bed. I related to him pulling the covers over his head. I related to him shutting all the windows and not wanting to talk to anybody. So I can relate to the cartoon at this point. And then Linus says, you know, Charlie Brown, the world did not end. And then what he did was he opened up the curtains and he did this. And he says, and then Linus walked out. And Charlie Brown started thinking about it. And then he slowly got out of bed. And as he walked outside, he saw Lucy. And Lucy had the football. So it kind of got his big eyes open again. And then he started sneaking behind the trees. And then he snuck up and he was going to kick that football. And right when he was going to kick the football, she pulls it away and he fell on his back. And Lucy says, welcome home, Charlie Brown. And the moral of the story is, even how terrible you felt, the world did not end. You know, it's like I don't want to bring you down, but it's like when you lose a loved one or something and you think your world's falling apart, the guy's still picking up the trash, the mail is still being dropped off. You know what I mean? The person at Walmart is saying, welcome to Walmart. The world did not end. It kept going on.
Right.
So you seem like your world ended, but it didn't, because people are still doing the same thing they always did. The world did not end. And so that's how I got.
No, okay.
Like the world did not. And so no matter how bad you feel and you think your life is crumbling down there and you think it's the end of your life and you maybe want to talk about suicide, I didn't go there. But you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, suck it up, Buttercup. The mailman still delivers the mail. The woman driving the car still has that, and Melissa likes this, that prescription windshield in her car.
Yeah,
that her face is pressed to the windshield because it's prescription.
Mm-hmm.
The world didn't end.
Absolutely.
So that's where I got that from.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. A little deep.
Wow.
Well, I'm going to let you guys go, and I want to thank you guys for coming in. God, it's
thank
7
you.
O'clock where you guys are. Thank you. And I'll see you guys.
Well,
I'll be talking to you guys every day. Thank you for the courage of making me.
Yeah, don't you forget to look at Lou.
Huh, kiddo?
Don't you forget to look at Lou.
I got to look at Lou. I have it right here. I have it. As soon as you said it earlier, I have it in my favorites, and I have a reminder that's going to remind me in 10 minutes to look at Lou.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you a review.
Okay.
All right, guys. See you later. Have a great evening.
Talk later.
All right, kiddo. Bye, Laverne. Bye. Bye. Boy, she just leaves. She's gone. Ooh, she left. She doesn't even... She says goodbye and she's gone.
Look at what's happened to me. I can't believe it myself. Suddenly I'm up on top of the world. It should have been somebody else. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I could feel so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer. Who could it be? Believe it or not, from out of the blue, breaking me out of the spell I was in, making all of